Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
The new Screensavers is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/NSS. And by CashFly. Make this the last month your CDN bill gives you a headache. Join the thousands of others, like me, who trust CashFly's reliable network. For a complimentary, detailed analysis of your current CDN bill and usage trends, visit twit.cashfly.com.
A first look at the Galaxy Note 9, hands-on with Nikon's new mirrorless full-frame cameras, and interacting with other people's homemade robots online. Live from the TWiT studios in Petaluma, California, it's the new Screensavers.
Woo! Woo!
I'm Leo Laporte.
I'm Jason Allen.
How are you? Episode 171, recorded Saturday, August 25th, 2018. That was Jill Ogle. She's going to show us how you can, and they're doing it right now, steer robots remotely all over our studio. And if you're watching live, letsrobot.tv, there's Huli. Hi, Huli.
That's obviously artificial intelligence, right, Leo? That's controlling this?
I think it's actually real intelligence. Somebody on the other end of the internet. That's what's cool about this.
Yeah. I love it.
We'll show you how you can play, too. Coming up also, I'm excited. For years, Sony has just owned the mirrorless camera space. We've been waiting for Nikon and Canon to respond. Nikon finally has. Joining us from DP Review, their science editor, Rishi Sanyal. Rishi's got hands-on in the new Z-Series cameras, and he'll give us some ideas of what to expect when they come out next month.
That's exciting. Yeah. Obviously, we kind of already talked about the robots, but I will just say they're going to be scooting around the studio throughout the show. And some of them talk. So if you hear a little, like,
that's the robot.
But anyways, I'm really looking forward to talking with Jillian about that.
There. Look, that's on the Let's Robot site. There you go. You get to see it from behind the scenes. There's even a robot that'll slap you.
Whoa. Slowly.
Silly.
Slowly. But, technically so.
Megan Maroney had a great interview a couple of weeks ago. Actually, I guess it was last week with Ken Kashenda. He's got a new book coming out. He was the designer of the original iPhone keyboard, and we thought because the triangulation, the book doesn't come out till next month, the triangulation doesn't come out till September 7th, we'd give you a little chunk of that today, a little tease of all of that.
I didn't know the iPhone had a keyboard.
Well, okay, just watch.
Watch.
Wouldn't that be funny if, like, yeah, I was responsible for the light on the iPhone, the little... they didn't put it in, but I was responsible.
But it was one of many ideas that I was considering, so it was not
cool?
The
digital keyboard. Yeah.
Speaking of digital keyboards, I know both of these phones have them. I'm going to talk about the Note 9, which I just got.
Ooh.
I basically unboxed it a couple of days ago. I haven't spent a whole lot of time with it, but we can kind of do a first look.
I was responsible for the remote control to arm on that.
Isn't it beautiful?
Isn't that pretty?
Doesn't it look similar to every other Note that's come out in the last couple
years? That's what I want to know. Should I trade in my Note 8 for a Note 9?
Yeah, so anyways, I'm going to talk about this. And then I also have the Moto Z3, the Verizon exclusive that I've been spending some quality time with, touted as the first 5G phone, but with a really, really large asterisk along with that.
Jason, as the host of All About Android, gets all the cool toys. We'll take a look at those, and then we're going to answer some questions in the mailbag. First, though, let's look at the news of the week. We'd like to pick a couple of the stories that caught our attention, like this one. Firefighters from Santa Clara County who were dispatched up about 100 miles north to Mendocino County to help fight that giant wildfire, which is still going on, and there's smoke in the air. Big deal. They've been up there for a while. Verizon started throttling their internet on their phones. They were using this for emergency services. Verizon says, it was a marketing error. The firefighters are suing, and they say this could never have happened if we hadn't overturned net neutrality.
I've heard a lot of people pushing back on this comment, saying net neutrality has more to do with content than
this
it
is
does
why that's a true this statement. This is from NBC News. One of the things that the net neutrality repeal did was it said, because the way we got net neutrality was that the broadband providers would be regulated as telecom providers,
right?
That's
right.
The Title II regulation.
Yeah.
And so what the FCC said is they turned that over and said, no, they're broadband, they're not telecom. And by the way, we're not going to enforce it. The FTC is going to enforce it. Had that rule still been in effect, these would have been telecommunications companies, very strict rules about pulling the plug on emergency
right
technologies, right? Slowing
being
it down,
proactive to
throttling
do so
it to yep 3G or 2G speeds. Mm-hmm. That would have been prevented. And there would be an enforcement arm with the FCC. The FTC, all they can do is say, well, your advertisements promised full throughput.
Right.
So this is exactly the kind of thing that companies like Verizon are now kind of empowered to do. And I really think that we need to stick their feet to the fire. Verizon says, well, it was a customer service error. Lives are at risk. This is not something okay to do. And by the way, the way that the Santa Clara Fire Department got it turned back on is by paying twice as much. More than twice as much. That's price gouging, right?
Yeah.
What's surge pricing for data when there's a forest fire? Not okay.
Yeah.
Not okay, Verizon. I'm sorry. That's not okay.
Well, and what's kind of ridiculous about this to me is obviously there's the safety issue, but what Verizon is falling back on is that every customer is the same, right? Like we've almost become numb to this idea of unlimited not actually meaning truly unlimited. And, you know, I suppose for consumers, like, it still feels bad, but they're probably going to make the claim that we've gotten used to it. And this is just the new definition of unlimited, are these different tiers of unlimited. But, you know, when you're talking about people's lives and, you know, an entire infrastructure built around that, that relies on that, it's a completely different story.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. I think we'll be seeing them in court.
I think so, too.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Let's see, what else? Oh, T-Mobile. If you're a T-Mobile customer, yeah, you might want to know about this, too. Now, T-Mobile has a lot of customers. I can't remember the number. It's 133 million, something like this. 3% of all T-Mobile customers, a total of 2.5 million, their information was breached from the T-Mobile site.
Another information breach.
That includes names, addresses, phone numbers, account numbers. Now, T-Mobile says, by the way, I just hate these phone companies. And I'm a T-Mobile customer. I hate these phones. T-Mobile says, the passwords were leaked, but they were hashed. But what remains to be seen is how well hashed they were. It looks like they used a notoriously weak hash called MD5, easy to crack with rainbow tables and brute force. So this could be a nightmare. We're going to follow this one very closely.
And this just happened. This happened on Monday.
Yeah,
this
late Thursday.
I'm so used to at this point, like we're so, like I just said, I'm numb to these this constant stream. But many times we hear about these things and it happened like a couple of months ago. So
well,
they're getting at least a little bit quicker on
thank
the
GDPR
jump
for that, because there's a 72-hour requirement.
Thankfully,
now,
my goodness,
this in this case, I'm suspecting it's T-Mobile U.S. and it's only T-Mobile U.S. customers, so
right,
maybe they weren't required. The breach, they said, happened August 20th. They told us about it Thursday. What's unclear is how much information was breached and
right
in how well secured those passwords were.
How
my suggestion, is, by the way, did you see the tweet from T-Mobile? Hello. You would have gotten this as a message. We ID'd and shut down an unauthorized capture of your info. They say they will tell everybody about this. So if you didn't get this message, maybe you were spared. No financial info
okay
or social security was taken, but some personal info might have been. So what you should
like
probably do, in fact, you should change your password. You might also want to change your PIN, because here's another story.
Oh, no.
Somewhat unrelated. Security flaws inadvertently left T-Mobile and AT&T customers' account pins exposed. It was kind of a convoluted hack. You had to buy something at the Apple Store.
Okay.
The security flaw was at the Apple Store. It exposed over 77 million T-Mobile customer account pins through, I guess, an API. It was also a separate vulnerability through the phone insurance company Asurion, which exposed the AT&T pins. Both Apple and Asurion have fixed the vulnerability after BuzzFeed told them about it. No further word. From Apple, Asurian says, Asurian takes customer security and privacy very seriously, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You might want to change your PIN, too.
Yeah. Change it all. Hey, why don't we just set a recurring calendar reminder?
Change your PIN.
Every week, change your PIN and change your password on all the sites that you visit just to be safe.
I hope we don't have to do that.
Feels like it. I mean, it feels so pointless to even work, you know, to do the effort to kind of bottle this stuff down because there's so many weaknesses. It's almost like it's way more complex than it is, you know, possible to secure it all.
Here's the big risk.
It's out of our hands.
Here's the big risk. If I know your PIN, I know your phone number, I know your account number, I could probably call up T-Mobile and say, hey, I lost my SIM.
Absolutely.
Can I come by and pick it up? Because I don't have access to my P.O. box or whatever. And then your SIM could get hijacked. Once your SIM's hijacked on your phone, then the bad guy can get all the two-factor authentication stuff that's sent to your phone. There's a continuing ramifications. So this is something you probably want to pay attention to. It's not going to hurt a lot of people, but you might want to think about changing your
PIN. Yeah.
Finally, we knew this would happen when Fortnite, Epic announced that they, and I'm sure you talked about it a lot on All About Android, they announced that they didn't like the 30% that Apple was getting on Fortnite aftermarket sales. It's estimated that Fortnite made $150 million in the first few weeks on the Apple store. I can't remember what the time, a month, say. That means Apple got $50 million of it and Epic got $100 million. Well, Tim Sweeney at Epic said, well, I don't like that. How can we get all of it? Well, with the Android version, they're not selling it on the Google Play Store. I know you talked about this. They decided to offer it as a sideload, which has some security ramifications. First of all, in order to get it, you have to turn off, you know, uncheck the box that says require all downloads to be from the Play Store. Says allow it from a third party. The good news is, and you talked about this last week on the new screensavers, the good news is, at least on most modern Android phones, if you uncheck it, download a file, it will recheck it. So you're not going to stay unprotected. Now, though, the worst-case scenario, we're learning that the first Fortnite installer that Epic put up allowed a hijacking exploit that means that some... Now, this is a complicated one. It's an extremely serious vulnerability. Allowed any app on your phone to download and install anything in the background, including apps with full permissions granted without your knowledge. That's not... Is that a big problem?
Kind of the...
Is that a big problem?
Kind of the worst-case scenario and the example of exactly what people were pointing to the moment Epic said, hey, we'd like to sidestep the Google Play Store and do this on our own. Everybody automatically jumps to, okay, that opens up a whole host of issues. In this case, Google's the one that actually noticed this initially. They found it. They went to Epic and let them know. Google has a public disclosure policy for zero-day exploits where they basically go public with this very quickly. And to that, Epic Games said, hey, Google, thank you so much for letting us know. We've made the changes. However, we really think you went public with this far too quickly.
You shouldn't have told anybody, dude.
Yeah.
We had an agreement.
And I don't know. It's hard to feel bad for Epic Games because, you know, there are systems in place for a reason, my personal opinion. If you go through the Play Store, there are a number of reasons why you do that. Sure, you're paying through the nose. Google would have made $30 million or something like that if Epic decided to release their game through the Play Store.
So what?
They're still going to make
massive
amounts of money.
This was always my contention. And what it looks like is Epic is greedy. They want the maximum amount of money. What is this doing here? Epic is greedy. They want the maximum amount of money. And as a result, they risked users' security. The reason this worked, it's called a man-in-the-disk attack.
Right.
And you've seen this with other games before. You don't download the whole game. You download a little stub that, you know, through the Epic site, and then that installs the rest of the game. Well, it turns out if an app knew this was going to happen, they could hijack that stub and say, no, you know, instead of getting Fortnite here, you might want to get it from hacker.com.
Right.
Not a
and
good
to
thing.
The app, it'll look like the Fortnite app content.
Absolutely.
But
all
it can be anything
enabled.
That they want.
Yeah.
Probably
nobody got bit, but let's hope anyway.
Yeah, let's hope.
All right, you got a new phone. I'm really excited. Actually, you got two new phones. We're going to start with the
fingerprinty phones here.
The Note 9, which went on sale Friday.
Yes.
Yeah, but you had pre-ordered it, so it came Friday.
Yeah, and you know, I got the blue model of the Note 9. I mean,
this is a metal back?
No, it's glass.
Oh,
glass
nice.
Front and back.
Does it wirelessly charge?
Wireless charging
like
on the Note
ones?
9, yes.
Yeah.
It's got a different, you know, fingerprint sensor location.
In the
it's
right
got
spot.
A, yep.
Not
yep.
next to the camera, which the old Note 8 was right next to the camera. This is more like the S9 where it's down below.
Right, it's down below. Yeah. Obviously, it's got a horizontal array of the dual cameras on the back. But I mean, otherwise, for the most part, the design is very similar to what you're used to on a Note 8. The S Pen obviously has some changes.
It's yellow!
It's yellow. It pops. It reminds you of an old Sony Walkman. But that button on the side there is now triggers Bluetooth LE commands.
So you were showing me this earlier. If you put the camera in, I can use this as a shutter control.
Yeah, so you hit the button on the S Pen and
it
starts to snap pictures. So you could set
That's
your
cool.
camera across the room, set
yeah.
up a nice group photo
yeah.
shot, get in place, and then just hit the button and it'll take the picture. So they're giving the S Pen more functionality than just drawing on the screen, which I'm sure some users didn't really get in the habit of doing that anyway, so why not use it in other ways?
There are some things that are bigger. The battery's bigger, 4,000 yep. milliamp hours.
4,000, yep.
You've had it such a short time, you can't really
I really unboxed this a couple of days ago. I've spent the majority of my time this past week with the Moto Z3, which I'll talk about later. So I haven't spent a lot of time on this. But, you know, we know what to expect from Samsung on their Note line, right? And this falls directly in line with that. It's going to be an amazing phone. It's an expensive phone. This model here has 128 gigs of storage.
Oh, you got so the cheap one.
I cheaped out.
Only 6 gigs of RAM. Only
I cheaped out for you.
You cheaped out. Only $1,000.
Only $1,000.
$250 more. You get 8 gigs of RAM and 512.
512 gigs of storage, which I don't need. Somebody.
You know what
it,
I do like about this? The other thing that's bigger is the screen. This is a.
Yeah.
You can't tell because it's bezel-less.
6.9-inch QHD.
That's almost.
Super AMOLED display.
You know, I want to. I brought. Out just to do a demo here. This is the tablet that Google used to sell. They stopped selling the Nexus 7-inch display. So I love this tablet.
The Nexus 7. It was
Nexus
a great
7.
Tablet. Yeah.
This is almost as big.
Yeah. And when you say almost as big, you mean like top to bottom. It's about the same size. Obviously, the Nexus 7 is a wider screen.
It's actually top to bottom really the same. This is a little.
Yep.
So if you miss your 7-inch tablet, this is pretty close at 6.9 inches.
Like a tablet in your pocket, a slim
with no
tablet.
Bezel. Yeah. Wow. That's bigger than the Note 8, right?
Yes. Yeah. The design is a little bit bigger than the Note 8.
Note 8 was I think 6.3.
And they're all going in this direction. You know, we've got Pixel 3 XL is leaking like a sieve at this point, and you know, that's a big upgrade from the Pixel 2 XL. That's not quite this large. I think it's 6.7 inch. So. Here we are again in the largening,
screens.
You know, of phones.
The leaked iPhone, I guess they're going to call it maybe the 10 Plus, is 6.4 inches. So these Android phones are still bigger than the biggest iPhones.
Smart camera in there. So I'm really curious to kind of play around with some of the smart camera features.
What's that mean?
Immediate feedback on certain things. So if you take a shot and somebody in the group is blinking, it'll tell you right away.
Oh.
Someone was blinking. Take that shot again. I haven't set it up, so I don't know if it's on my default.
It also has an AR emoji.
AR emoji. And, wide selfie.
I hate this. This is the creepiest thing ever.
Oh.
All right. I won't do that on your phone. That's just not right.
You're
going to
leave me
right,
with your
man.
AR emoji.
That's just not right, man. It's got selfie focus. Oh, I'm in selfie focus now. What's selfie focus?
I don't know. Does it just focus your
Both
face
of us?
And everything?
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
So I will play around with that. Obviously, the camera quality is going to be really good.
Oh, yeah.
It always is on the Note series nowadays, especially.
What Samsung's doing. They're basically TikToking now. The S9 comes out mid-year. The Note 9 comes out at end of year.
Yep.
So that way they can keep leapfrogging. Mm-hmm. And making it a little bit better each time. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
53% faster CPU than the Note 8, 23% faster GPU.
In the US, Snapdragon 845.
845, right.
It'll be
in the Exynos processor internationally. So I'm really excited to spend the next week or so. And next week on the show, I will kind of give more of an in-depth review. I'm actually going to be on next week as well. So I will be here in studio and we'll dive into it.
I won't be here. Who's going to be with you next
Patrick
week?
Norton.
Patrick Norton. Awesome. Look, the little robot is visiting me.
Hi.
Hi, little robot.
Are you lost?
How are you doing?
Do you know where you're going right now?
If you, if you're watching the show live right now and you want to control this robot, letsrobot.tv, and you'll be able to control some of these robots Jill's got.
So fun. I love it.
Did Jill, do they fight? Like, do some, like, do different people tell it to do different things and they conflict?
There's a voting system.
Yeah. So this is kind of like when Twitch plays Pokemon or something like that.
Yeah.
There's a vote. So they're voting to run into me, apparently. I don't.
That is amazing.
We'll find out more about that in a second. But right now, let's talk to DP Review. Science editor Rishi Sanyal is here. And he and the rest of the DP Review staff got to see something brand new from Nikon. We thought they were going to announce this at Photokina next month.
No. Well ahead of Photokina at a launch event in New York City. Where they invited a lot of the press and a lot of people. And it'll be on display at Photokina, but they actually launched it earlier than we would have guessed.
Cool. So there's two models, right? The Z6 and the Z7. Tell us about those.
Right. So the Z7 is its high-resolution model. It has a sensor very similar to the one in the D850. It's 45.7 megapixels, except it's got on-sensor autofocus now, so that's what makes it different from the D850 sensor. The Z6 is a lower cost model with 25.4 megapixels, I believe, and that is going to go for $2,000, whereas the Z7 is going for $34,000 or $4,000 with the 24-70 f/4 lens.
So this is going right up against Sony's A7 R3, right?
They're very comparable to the A7 R3 and the A7 III, essentially. They're just competitors to those models. But you could also think that they're like Nikon's mirrorless D850 and D750.
Well, that's why I think both Canon and Nikon have been slow to the market with mirrorless, because they don't want to cannibalize their mirror cameras like the D850, which is an incredible camera.
Yeah.
Who would buy this instead of a D850?
Well, I think that the entry of one of the big giants in the camera industry into the mirrorless segment, it says a lot of things, but mostly it just sort of admits that mirrorless is the future.
Yeah.
Sony has already been showing us that mirrorless is the future because of the awesome technologies they can pack into their cameras, all based off of the image sensor. And the image sensors are just progressing. The technology and image sensors are progressing at an incredible rate. So that allows for really cool things like autofocus and video and autofocus and video and subject recognition and understanding who and what you want to photograph and tracking it. And the other thing is that the less mechanical parts, the better. You know, without a mirror, without like that mirror after having to flip out of the way, you can get higher frame rates. Higher frame rates will bring new things in the future, like the computational things that the phones like the Pixel 2 does. All these sorts of things are going to evolve from relying on the image sensor and the progress in image sensor technology. So Nikon, at the D5 launch event, I remember they had all this these demonstrations of how the D5 is still better than like Sony's mirrorless. They didn't call it Sony, they just said competitor, and they're showing like live feed through the viewfinder and everything.
Competitor.
They were very much campaigning for DSLR technology, and then the A9 came out and showed that you can just have blackout free shooting. Like, you don't even have to have a black frame in between shots. And so it's really just an admission that mirrorless is the future.
It's the future. The one thing that a lot of pros who are really in love with mirror cameras, DSLRs with mirrors, is they are seeing optically what's going on through the lens. It's a through-the-lens system. With one of these cameras, any mirrorless camera, you have to use an electronic viewfinder. How's the EVF on these cameras?
So one of the things, so first of all, the EVF on the Z7 and Z6 is gorgeous. It's actually the nicest EVF experience we've seen, and that's funny thing is it's the same display unit inside of it. It's the same as what's inside of the A9 and A7 R3. But the optics that they put in there just give you a big, gorgeous image. And also, they're always showing you a high-resolution preview through that viewfinder, even when you're shooting. Whereas the Sony cameras, for example, and a number of other cameras, will give you a lower-resolution preview when you're shooting. So it doesn't actually look as great when you're shooting. In playback, it looks great on Sony cameras. With a Nikon Z7 and Z6, playback versus shooting, they both look the same. They're just gorgeous. It's detailed. It's crisp. It's big. But there's still, there's still some advantages to the optical viewfinder. One is that for people who like to see the full dynamic range of the real world, you still don't get that through an EVF because EVF is showing you essentially what the JPEG image is going to look like. So it's a limited dynamic range of the world. But on the other hand, it's showing you what you're going to get. The other thing is there's still a tiny bit of a lag between the real world and what you're seeing in the EVF, but it's getting so, so short that it's practically almost irrelevant for most types of photography.
And, of course, an EVF can show more information. You can have a histogram on it. You can have lots more data than you would have on an optical viewfinder.
Oh, it's so much faster to just see that you need to dial in positive or negative exposure comp rather than having to take the shot, then look at it, then say, oh, it's too dark. Like, you can just do it right there. Sony cameras, I think we discussed this before, with their Zebra displays and HLG modes allow you to perfectly expose your RAWs.
They're like I use that all the
RAW
time.
Histograms.
Yeah.
So,
the big thing here is this is a new mount. This is not going to use any of your existing Nikon lenses, right?
Well, there's the FTZ adapter.
There is an adapter. Okay.
There is. And it's we've used it, and I have to say it really feels like just seamless.
So all the electronics, all the autofocus, everything that's built in that lens, the stabilization, whatever is built in that lens, that's going to work fully on the new Z cameras with the proper adapter.
It just feels like you're using a native Z lens. Like tried a bunch of different...
That's good.
Right. And it's kind of also what you'd expect because Nikon knows all its own protocols and electronics and autofocus language and everything. So everything just gets communicated. And the other great thing is you get, with all your F-mount lenses, you now get almost full AF coverage, right? And you also get in-body image stabilization added, which you didn't have before. So those are two big advantages that the Z7 and Z6 offer over Nikon DSLR, even with your old glass. But we should talk about the new mount. It's the largest mount we've ever seen on any full-frame camera.
The size of the opening.
Yeah, it's 55 millimeters, which is huge. And it was very brave of Nikon to do that because on the one hand, they risked alienating some users by not reusing the F mount.
Right.
But on the other hand, it's just much better to have a larger throat because it allows for much more freedom in lens design. So lenses can be designed to be better.
Look how close to the surface that sensor is. It's right there. There's no mirror in the way or anything. It's something that's taken me a while to get used to with mirrorless cameras. Is that sensor's right there.
So I'm glad you mentioned that because that's the other thing about this. This is a 16 millimeter flange distance. So it's the smallest flange distance we've ever seen, which means this is the world's most adaptable camera. Like if someone makes an adapter for it, you can adapt any lens ever made to this camera because of that short flange distance.
That was a real selling point on the Sony A7s was there were adapters for my old Leica lenses and everything else. That will be the same, in fact, even better on this new Nikon Z7.
As long as people make the adapters and they open up the AF protocols or reverse engineer them. The other thing about going to the smaller flange distance and not sticking with the F-mount is that, you know, you want mirrorless to be smaller and lighter. I mean, that's not the main advantage of mirrorless, in my opinion. It's really the fact that you're using the image sensor for AF and the AF accuracy and all and WYSIWYG and whatever. Just you see what you get. But apart from being like 30% lighter than the D850, the actual camera will always feel lighter with a comparable lens, simply because you look at this A7 R3, the lens is just held out so much, it's just so close to the actual body compared to a DSLR where the lens is just held so far out because of that long flange distance. And when any object is held further out, you feel more weight. Right? Because it's just pulling your hand forward. So it's not just that the mirrorless is 30% lighter. It actually tends to feel even lighter than that because the lenses are so close to the body.
How is the ergonomics of this? Is it like a Nikon body?
The ergonomics are wonderful. It's really pleasing to shoot with. And, you know, I say that as someone who's shot every system. You know, I shot Canon for 20 years, went to Nikon, shoot Sony. You have to use everything in the office. But this feels like a Nikon. The grip is great. It's a much nicer grip than, I have to say, than this because my finger just runs off the
bottom. Sony grips are not great. Even the improved A9 grip is still a little scant. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a small point. You can add something to this. But
sure.
The other point is that the rest of the camera feels like a Nikon DSLR. Granted, there's some missing buttons, so you have to rely on the touchscreen a little more, but the touchscreen is really responsive. You get, you know, everything you expect, like the movie record mode, or ISO and exposure comp buttons right at the top. Things are generally where you expect them to be. You get the same menu system, so it feels exactly like a Nikon DSLR. The images are fantastic. You've got Nikon's colors. You've got an incredible noise reduction engine that in low light removes noise but keeps detail there. It's in that sense, it's great. There are some caveats to that statement, like the AF system, which is kind of one of our main criticisms of the system, is that a Nikon DSLR shooter coming over to this system will feel that the AF system is very unfamiliar. I mean, it's nice in that the points are bright red. You can see them. One of my complaints with some other systems is that you can't even see the AF point, but this, they went with a nice bright Nikon red AF point. You can tap on this screen to initiate focus. So they did a lot of things right, but we were somewhat surprised that they didn't end up recreating all the AF modes that are available on Nikon DSLRs, because those are AF modes that have been iterated and honed in on over years and years of research and feedback from the pros. And they emulated a few of the modes, like single point and D9 and auto, but they didn't emulate like the larger dynamic modes. And the one that we miss the most in the new cameras is 3D tracking, because that's Nikon's 3D tracking is basically where you tell the camera, you initiate focus on your subject, and the camera will keep track of it no matter where it goes into the frame. It's class leading, it's industry leading. And while this camera has that mode, the way of actually engaging it is cumbersome and slow and might make you miss shots in fast-paced shooting scenarios.
That's disappointing, yeah.
Yeah, this is a good example of the D5. Go ahead.
Another disappointment is a single card slot. I thought we'd gotten past those days.
Yeah, it's also XQD, so it's going to require people to buy XQD cards.
You have to buy new cards for it?
Well, you have to buy an XQD card, right? And a card reader as well.
Disappointing.
Yeah, it's a little disappointing because, you know, given that we were working with a pre-production unit, so things might change.
A standard SD card size? It's a different size?
No, it's a totally different card. And actually, so that's what the D5 and D850 use. But the D850 has a secondary SD card slot in case you want it.
I have so much invested, as I'm sure you do, in SD cards.
Everybody does.
Yeah. You know, I wouldn't mind as much, but in our experience, so if you use a D5, that's XQD only, and we don't really mind it because you can take 200 shots in like a half a second.
They're
after
fast.
Taking a 200
yeah.
shot.
Yeah.
It is already written to the card.
Yeah.
And the weird thing about this camera was that the Z7, its buffer is tiny, so it fills up like
you need it.
Within 23 shots. It's 2.5 seconds of shooting. It's filled up. And given the performance of XQD we saw in the D5, we would have expected the camera to just clear the buffer to the card like within a fraction of a second, but it actually takes longer to clear. So you'll find yourself waiting for the buffer to clear, and that just, to me, means that you're not getting the full advantage of having to spend that extra money on the XQD card and XQD card reader. Granted, that might change with firmware, but the speed just didn't seem to be there.
And why only one slot? I mean, this is a pro camera.
That's a really good question. I don't know. There's speculation. You know, one could play devil's advocate and say they still want to reserve
their
DSLRs for the pro for the pro market, and that there's a future model that will have dual card slots. Or
Sony was single card for the first few, but they finally came around to dual card and.
Well, that's why I think the expectations were high on this launch, right? Because Sony's been at this game for 5 years. They're on their third generation.
Right.
They're coming into the game late. And if you're coming into the game late, you got to come in strong, and you can't be making mistakes that first and second gen products might make because you're so late to the game.
Right.
I think that's why in some of our coverage, we tried to be very fair, but the comparison point here is what Sony offers. You know,
sure.
It's not like you can say that, this is forgivable because it's a first-gen product, but this is the bar is set by top-end mirrorless cameras, and that's what it's going to be compared to.
If you had a lot of Nikon glass, this might be good. You'd have to get the adapter. How much is the adapter?
It's actually pretty reasonably priced. Okay. I think it's...
Is MetaBones or are some of the other adapter companies going to make adapters as well? Have they said? I imagine they will.
Maybe, but the tricky thing is that the AF protocols and everything have to be reverse engineered.
Okay.
So
I might want to get it from Nikon if you're going to get it.
I mean, I think a lot of the AF protocols have already been reverse engineered because we have Tamron and Sigma Nikon F-mount lenses. So it probably will see adapters. I bet you would see adapters.
They do have native lenses. There's 3-ounce, a 35mm f1.8, a 50mm f1.8, the 24-70 f4. And I see that they're thinking about a Nacht lens, a f.95.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the awesome things about having that wide throat. You can have 0.95 lens.
That's going to set you back as much as the body, at least.
Rumors are something like... very, very highly priced.
Yeah,
And also it's manual focus. So I was a little surprised by that, but I'm hoping for great optical performance. We haven't, we got to try the two of the lenses, the 35-1.8 and the 24-70. They're nice and small. One of the advantages of having such a short flange distance is that you can make wide angle lenses much smaller. So actually there's we published a slideshow that has a picture of the 14-30 f/4 that's coming down the road in a year or two. And, I mean, it's small. Just like Sony's 12-24, it's surprisingly small for its optical quality. The 24-70 is nice and compact. The 35-1.8 was good. It still has some of that telltale Nikon purple and green fringing, which most Nikon primes have. We're a little surprised to still see that. But it's sharp. It is sharp right at f1.8, and even the 24-70 is sharp at wide open. So in that sense, the lenses look pretty strong. We'll have to test other properties like their bokeh. The bokeh on the 24-70 was a little questionable. 35-1.8 was better. The other thing was their autofocus performance. So now they're silent, so you can use them to shoot video and get autofocus in video. On the other hand, though, we did feel that with the 35-1.8, the autofocus was slower than we'd expect with a typical Nikon fast lens and a DSLR setup. And sometimes the autofocus would sort of hunt off in the wrong direction or play catch up as on fast approaching subjects. Now, this could all be pre-beta firmware stuff or whatnot, but those are some of our observations, our initial observations that might, that would, you know, a Nikon shooter that uses their DSLRs for fast-paced action might want to do their own tests and kind of decide for themselves.
So first entry in the mirrorless for Nikon, the Z6 and the Z7. The Z7 will be available September 27th, $33.99 body only. The Z6, late November, $19.95 body only. Sounds like a fairly worthy entry from Nikon with a few little things perhaps they could do better next time. But certainly... something worth looking at, especially for D850 owners, right?
I think it's definitely a strong entry with some caveats that we hope will be addressed. I think the real question to ask here is, you know, who are they targeting? Right. And it seems to us that they're really just targeting Nikon DSLR shooters.
Yeah, because they don't want to lose anybody to Sony. this is a rear guard filling action.
But on the other hand, I wonder how they're going to attract new users. Not just Nikon shooters to this system.
Yeah, so if you're saying if you haven't chosen, then you should probably look at a Sony.
You should consider your options. Yeah. I think that this is a very strong one. I think that the challenge is going to be, having pushed DSLR for so long, how do you convince your own DSLR crowd that mirrorless is better? Because there are lots of advantages, like autofocus accuracy and video AF. The video AF on here is probably the best video AF we've seen on any mirrorless camera so far. So that's great. So there's some very strong things about this, and it'll be interesting to see Nikon actually trying to get their own DSLR shooters over by explaining the benefits of mirrorless, which there are many.
Science editor Rishi Sanyal, you can see his review, his first look, a lot of pictures at dpreview.com. Thank you so much for taking some time with us, Rishi. I'm
Absolutely.
Sorry if we've bored you Jason.
No, thank you. No, I love talking about this.
I know you're not bored, Rishi. I wanted to
get in there and spar, but obviously you guys have a language all your own.
It's a different world. It's a different world. Hey, thank you, Rishi. Have a great
day. Thank you so much.
All right, take care.
Thank you, Rishi.
Do you have a fancy camera?
We have. So actually, I bought for my wife probably about 4 years ago for Christmas. I bought her a mirrorless DSLR.
Nice.
Can't remember if it was a mirrored or mirrorless. See, this is how
you're not really
how unknowing I am.
Do you know who made it?
at this point, I don't, and I'll tell you why.
Why?
Because I bought it for her, and she was super excited about it, and I think she's used it like 3 times.
Oh, no.
And all it does is sit on a hook, which is totally fine. I get it, right? Like, you have to set out
a
scenario.
Yeah, yeah.
You actually have to work to use these things. Yeah. It's not as easy as just leaving and, hey, I have a phone in my pocket that has a camera, which is just what we're used to.
Truth is, that's the real competition for these, is smartphones, which are getting better and better and better, and they're in everybody's pocket. It's a professional photographer who's going to lay out $4,000for something like this.
Right.
And that's what that conversation really was for, is a professional who's trying to decide, well, where's my next move?
Yeah.
And it's not obvious. It's not easy.
Yeah, we've got that camera waiting in 10 years when we finally get around to using it.
You know who's going to your daughters.
It'll be horribly outdated.
One of your daughters is going to go, Dad, I'd like to take some photography classes.
And we'll be like, here you go,
honey.
It's
I've been waiting.
Practically brand new.
She'll say, I won't use that. That's from 1999. We're going to meet.
That old.
You hear all these robots? They're taking over the studio.
Oh, it's awesome! I love it.
We're going to meet with Let's Robots, Jillian Ogle. She invented all of this. They've got a great streaming thing. We're going to talk about building your own, controlling the robots. It's basically Twitch for robots. It's so awesome.
Yeah.
But first, a word from our sponsor, Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage is making the whole home buying process a much more relaxing thing. Let's face it, it's a big deal. You're writing the biggest check you'll ever write. You're buying something you and your family are going to be living in for a long time. You're going to be paying every month. It's nervous making. So let's make it as easy as possible. Let's do that with Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Quicken Loans, number one mortgage lender in the country for 8 years in a row in customer satisfaction. That's according to a J.D. Power, and rightly so. I mean, they really are customer-focused. They're also number one in mortgage servicing, so you're going to have a continually good ongoing experience. But let's talk about getting that loan. We mentioned before, Rocket Mortgage lets you do it online. You can do it from your phone. It's that easy at rocketmortgage.com/NSS. In fact, you go there right now at no cost, create the account just to get started. When it comes time, or maybe you're going to start house hunting, you want to go through the process, and this is so cool. They call it the power buying process. It has a couple of stages. First thing that happens, we've talked about this before, is you go to rocketmortgage.com/NSS, and you apply online. It's a simple application, answer a few questions. You don't have to go to the attic and get paperwork. You don't have to call previous employers and get pay stubs. They'll do that all for you. They will give you, within 10 minutes, in most cases, they're going to give you what they call qualified approval. That means, yeah, and choose the loan, you're good. What will happen then over the next 24 hours is a loan officer will review it and then give you the next step within 24 hours called verified approval. Now you've got the strength of a cash buyer. You go in and you make an offer on a house. You show them that verified approval letter. The seller says, you've been through this. The seller says, okay, you got the loan, you're good. I like that. I like no contingencies. Sellers will love you for that.
Absolutely.
The next thing that happens really is something, it's kind of a sign of the times. For years, like the last couple of years, interest rates have been pretty flat, but they've been going up. You saw the Fed raised interest rates. They said they're going to raise it again. That means home loan rates are going up. That means there's some pressure on you when you're out there looking at a house, because if you wait too long, the interest rates could tick up a quarter of a point, a half a point. That could mean tens of thousands of dollars more that the house is going to cost you over the life of the loan. So instead of really taking your time and finding the perfect place, there's pressure. Do it now. Do it now. You're going to buy the wrong house. You don't need that anxiety. That's why this third step is so awesome. They call it rate shield approval. Once you get verified approval, they will lock your rate for up to 90 days. It cannot go up. 90 days. You have up to 3 months to shop. It cannot go up. It could go down. If the rates go down, I don't think they're going to. But if they did, you would win either way. If they can't go up and they could go down. This is exactly what you'd expect from a mortgage lender that cares about their customers. Quicken Loans and Rocket Mortgage. You can start right now. RocketMortgage.com/NSS. Here's the legalese I have to read. Rate shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. This part's important. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. And this is the part you got to remember. RocketMortgage.com/NSS. RocketMortgage.com/NSS. Thank you so much, Rocket Mortgage, for making the new screensavers possible. Now, let's go get some robots.
Let's roll on over there.
Let's roll.
Just like the robots have been doing for the past hour.
They're so cute. They will not stop.
They're awesome.
They do things. That's Jillian Ogle. She's the founder and CEO of Let's Robot, a platform where anyone can take control of other people's home-brewed robots over the internet. Jillian said it's okay for me to refer to this as kind of like Twitch for robots.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it.
Yeah. Hi, good to see you. Welcome.
Good to see you.
So if you go right now to letsrobot.tv, we're on the front page, and you could actually control some of these devices rolling around here, right?
Actually, let me put a robot on the front page.
Put a robot on the front page. They're more than one, though. You could also go to Jillian's account.
How many are running around here right now?
Oh, we've got three on right now.
Got three out there, and then you've got this one streaming as well.
Yeah, that one's sitting on the desk.
So you're not... what's interesting to me is that this is not your background. You're not a roboticist.
Yeah.
You're an artist. Right?
Oh, yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're busy. I'll let you type.
I was adding...
She's slacking.
Oh, yeah, I'm slacking off. That's what I do.
So that's the view from one of the robots. This is letsrobot.tv right now.
Oh, yes.
And somebody... Now, how do you control it?
So if you just go to letsrobot.tv, you can sign up for an account. You can control any of the robots that anyone adds online. There's multiple robots. Anyone can add a robot. We have open source software that runs on a Raspberry Pi. We have an API.
Oh, neat.
We have kits that we're working on getting out to people.
So people could download the kit or the instructions to build.
Well, you'd also have to buy some hardware, right?
Yeah, but obviously. Basically the idea is to be compatible with just about any robot. Mm-hmm. So we're just trying to figure out ways to interface with as many pieces of hardware as possible and to let people control them in real time. Yeah.
So who built these? Did you build these?
Yeah, I built these. Yeah.
But your background is as an artist.
Yeah, so I was a professional artist for about 10 years. I worked for Disney Interactive.
Oh, neat. Doing games?
Yeah, doing games.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and...
So you can draw a perfect bell?
I can draw a pretty good bell. My drawing skills have probably gotten a little rusty. It's been a while.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah. And how did you get into robots?
So after I was doing art, I actually hopped over to game design while I was still at Disney. And then when I left, I went to go do indie games for a while. And I finished a project, launched it on iPad, and then it was like, okay, time for my next prototype. So I spun up a few projects, and this was one of them. And I was like,
this one.
Oh, yeah. Because I was just getting into live streaming, and like all my indie game friends were live streaming, then Twitch Plays Pokemon came out, and I was like, oh, this is really interesting, except it sucks, because, you know, there's like all this latency.
It was a car wreck,
it was a total car wreck.
That was part of the fun of watching people trying to do something.
I mean, so you have all this latency, you have chat is the only interface, so you have like all this spam in the chat, you know, I was like, it would be a lot more interesting if you sort of designed around this use case and figured out, like, how to, you know, how do you handle multiple people trying to do a thing? What can you do with that sort of tool, like, if it's real-time and interactive? And I thought, well, robots would sort of be the end game here. So, yeah, I started working on this platform.
How do you handle multiple people throwing commands and instructions and stuff at a single object? Like... Is it just in any given second the number of turn lefts versus the number of turn rights that the highest number wins and that command is sent at that moment? How does that work?
So the robot does what the consensus is at any given time. So it's called a real-time dynamic voting system. Okay.
You should call that an RTDV.
An RTDV. Yeah. The other name is like the mass user interface or the MUI.
The more times I hit left, more votes I get, or do I only get one vote?
You only get one vote at any time. So you can use the arrow keys to drive. some commands aren't tied to votes, so they're just sort of free to use. Some commands you have to pay for, and, you know, it's all very prototype-y and early stage, but people seem to be pretty interested in this so far.
Yeah, it's really
fun. To work really well.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was one of the problems with Pokemon, was that it was chaotic.
Yeah.
So you've worked on ways to make it a little bit more like something's really going on.
Yeah, and like we're actually getting close to doing a big update, and that'll help kind of smooth out the controls as well,
nice,
right?
Because
right now it's pretty rudimentary. There's just like, you know, single buttons, but we'll add like, you know, vectors or like analog stick style controls.
Oh, fun.
And that'll make it a little bit more smooth.
So there's really two ways to play. You could build your own robot and put it online, or you can be a consumer, a robot consumer.
Yes, or you can play Control. The robots can hear if you type in the chat. A lot of them talk.
So is that what's going on with that noise?
Oh, yeah, that's them chatting away. So, you know, they hang out with me all day at work and go with me to places. And
can you silence them when you need to?
Oh, yeah.
You need to focus? All right.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Plus, they have off switches. So,
well, that's true.
You know, when things get really dire, there's always that.
So one thing that I've noticed, speaking of speaking, is in chat, not everything that hits chat is spoken through the speaker. Sometimes a comment will go by and I notice it doesn't go through, but then another two or three comments will go by and they will actually pass through. Is there a different command, or is it just reciting anything that's being put into the chat?
So if you put a period in front of the sentence right now, it'll stop. It won't say it out loud.
That's what I was missing.
And, and then I... because this room is shared between all the robots that I own.
Wait a minute. This one room controls all of these?
Yeah. So, like, you'll see the robot name next to the person's name, and then they'll be, you know, because they're talking on that robot. But this is Jill's chat room, right? So it's a little bit of a different structure because I own multiple robots, but they're all the same, you know. Owner.
So I'm going to follow you. If I wanted to do that, I'd go to letsrobot.tv/robocaster/Jill.
Yeah.
And you keep this on all the time? Yeah, this is like always going?
Yeah, and I try to stream as much
You're like JR in the guy in Blade Runner who had he'd come home and go, "Hello, J.I., hello, J." You're like right?
Oh, yeah. Like, well, you know, we're slowly working towards Pee-wee's big playhouse.
Okay, good.
Right. Everything
some of these have headlamps, which is cool, so they can look around in the dark.
Oh, yes. Yeah, they can make little faces with the LED panels. And, like, you know...
That's neat.
And the robots can be anything, right? So these are simple wheeled robots, but people have made, like...
Somebody's doing the hand right now.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a little hand that's waving.
This one sits on my desk.
So somebody's controlling that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and like, if you see here, like, you can, the parts for this robot are actually exposed. So, you know, there's like an Arduino here, and that's controlling the motors. And then the Raspberry Pi handles a lot of the streaming.
How much to build a robot, roughly, one of your kits?
A lot of the users can get a kit for around $200 to $250.
Okay.
Some of the ones that we sell, because they're more.
I kind of want to do this.
Yeah.
Like have one in my house.
Oh yeah, that would be a lot of fun. So a lot, really
check
popular
with,
one.
Check with Lisa.
Lisa may like it. She will step on it, and the cats will go crazy.
Yes, they will.
Do you have cats?
I do not have cats.
Okay.
We do have a little dog in the house though, and they do
the
have
dog
a lot of
think?
Fun. The dog keeps its distance. Some people, you know, their pets are less, or they're a little bit more brave,
J.F. Sebastian, that's who had little robots.
So you're relatively new yourself to robotics in general. Did you pursue the idea of the site and the kind of interface prior to learning about how to build robots? Did that make it any easier to learn? Because when I think about building a robot, I feel like that's a big hill to climb.
Yeah, so sort of the progression that it went was I wanted to make an internet-controlled robot, and I was like, and I was already streaming to Twitch, so I was like, okay, I'll build one and stream it to Twitch. It took me about a month to figure out how to make a wireless robot that could stream to Twitch. And then, you know, Twitch has all its latency. In my first version, I actually, like, ran the video through a game engine and added all these 3D graphics and stuff.
Oh, wow.
But now we're just trying to run, like, straight off a Raspberry Pi, and we're really focused on, like, the low latency and the interactive aspect.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, because it's real-time control. So you don't, if there's any delay in this, you're going to hit a button and it's going to take a while for it to happen. So this is, less latent. You're trying to get this almost in real time.
And I did the Twitch channel for a while, and then one of my friends suggested that I join like a startup incubator and try to turn into a thing. So that's doing the whole startup.
That was good time. Advice.
It could have been premature advice. It's too hard to say.
The best way to do something like this is just jump in. Should jump in with all wheels.
Well, do you charge for this?
No. You can stream a robot for free.
That's one thing you can solve.
People do actually charge for certain things.
Okay.
For instance, like you can see here, like there's cop lights that you could do on the LEDs, and I have that set to one robot, and a robot is something you can buy to spend on things.
So
I do
much
that
like Twitch, you could have donations.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So we had a user who built a high-velocity, air-powered ping-pong cannon, and she had it on in her workshop while she was working.
Yeah.
And then, people would pay money and pelt her with ping-pongs while she was, trying to get stuff done.
That would be the solution for you and Stacey Higginbotham that wants to be able to punch
you
over
the internet. So one of our co-hosts is in Austin, and she wants to be able to punch me every once in a while.
So maybe get the ping-pong thing.
Have her shoot ping-pongs.
Yeah, that's close second.
You had one like that, though, right? You asked people on Twitch to slap you.
Yeah. So one of the first robots I made I called it the bit slapper because the you use bits on Twitch, right? So people would donate bits, and then the hand would slap me in the face as soon as they donated. And then, the first day I turned that thing on, I made, $300.
So dang!
There's kind of something to this.
Yeah. I think you also learned something about humanity.
Right.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. So this is one of the reasons you have to create an account. You don't want just random people wandering in and getting chaos.
You have to, if you want to control the robots that are in the studio right now, you have to sign up for an account. You'll have to verify it.
That's good.
And
I think
then, it just sends you a verification email. So just click on the link, and then you'll be able to control and use the ones in here. And then, that helps us sort of curtail the internet.
What is this hockey puck do here?
So this is one of the kits that I was selling. This is called a Telebot, and this is all handmade, 3D printed. It has a Raspberry Pi on the inside. And then I use a parallax multi-core controller for the insides. It has a speaker. It has a pretty good high-def camera, a microphone. And then it's just this nice little package. I actually made this specifically for Twitch streamers.
This looks really beautiful.
Yeah.
Are you still selling this?
I had to take the orders offline for a bit because we're still catching up. We're actually gearing up to do a new kit, and we're going to put that online very soon. But we'll sell these again pretty soon.
I'm going to buy a kit because I don't think I could design this myself. Although down the road, I think it would be fun to have. You can think of a lot of.
Yeah.
Evil things to do.
Absolutely. Well, that's one of my questions. So when you open up a service like this, and it's so open-ended, people can build whatever they want. Mm-hmm. Just watching how people have built these things, what's the most creative kind of robot scenario that someone has set up?
People have done a lot of interesting things. I like the kind of non-standard robots. I know that there's a guy right now just working on controlling a single LED and turning it on and off, right? So that's completely ridiculous. On the other end, you have somebody built an XY plotter for their whiteboard in their office.
Oh, that's cool.
Draw pictures on their whiteboard.
We've had several drawing. Of those arcade claw machines, and somebody added a spinning plate to one of them and a scoreboard, and somebody else added a fog machine to their claw machine, right? Somebody built the BattleBot, took us to a BattleBot competition, the internet use their robot to fight. We won the first round.
Nice!
We lost the second one to Butterbot from Rick and Morty.
Well, that's not a bad bot to lose to.
it was a tie, and then it was left up to popular vote, and of course people are going to vote
against Rick and Morty.
Who's going to vote against Butterbot?
Yeah. Butterbot, no. Yeah. This is really neat.
Yeah,
I really like this.
I love it.
I hope you can make a living doing this.
Yeah, me too.
You think the kits would be one avenue for monetizing? You don't want to charge. This must cost a lot to have a bunch of streams.
Well, I mean, we're working on getting funding. We do make some money through the site, but the idea is, we're a content distribution platform for interactive content. So, we help people try to monetize their content. We split the revenue with them. That's basically the model.
That's a good model.
Yeah,
I like that model.
And if you guys want to be supportive, we have a Patreon.
Good. I'm going to support you.
Patreon.com/letsrobot.
What's the, tell me about the front end for this. Are you running a node or what is it running on?
So we're using React on the front end. Our new version of the site is using only Go. Right now, the current site that's up is a mix between Go and Node.js on the back end. We're actually about ready to launch like a whole new build of everything. So.
And Go is a good choice for low latency.
Well, the nice thing about Go is it's parallelized. Mm-hmm. So JavaScript is single threaded.
Right.
Go is multi-threaded.
Right. So
when
you
you're trying
throw more
to do,
cores at it whenever you need to.
So when you're trying to do a bunch of stuff concurrently, Go seems pretty useful for that.
Yeah,
kind
concurrency
of stuff.
Is a big deal for you. I can tell. Look at you got this row. So the top row is movement controls, then RGB LED controls, and then emote LED controls.
Oh yeah, you can make faces.
Oh, with the LED like eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So great. And that's just one robot, right?
Yeah, this is just one robot. We can... So is this on the screen right
now?
Yeah,
they're showing it. Okay. So this is another one that's one of those claw games, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you're controlling that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It looks like somebody already stuffed them all in the hole.
Holy cow.
Seriously,
when I tell my kids that this exists, they're going to go ape.
Oh, yeah, because you have to
love
pay money
these
for
things.
This.
Yes,
oh, yeah.
Totally.
There's a couple of claw machines. Let's see if the other one's on.
Oh, my goodness.
How big is your community?
It doesn't appear to be on. We have a 1,000 or so people in our Discord. We've probably had 20 to 30,000 people sign up for accounts.
Nice.
Definitely.
And how many
hits.
Robot makers are there?
I don't know that number off the top of my head. I know that we've had close to 1,000 homemade robots go live at some point.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's a lot more than I would have thought. Because this is building a robot is non-trivial.
Yeah, yeah. It actually surprised me the number of homebrew robots that were added to the site.
Well, in a way, you're creating an ecosystem that mm-hmm. people can monetize their homebrew robot. Others can play with it. I mean, this hasn't existed before. This is great.
No, thank you.
I love it.
That's really cool.
Did you
I
think
can't
this
wait to
would
tell
be
my kids about the clock?
This would become your focus in life. Let's play robot games?
Oh, no. I don't know. Well, I guess one of my childhood dreams was to have, a robot army. So
you have one!
Yeah,
yes, you do.
Jill has created a robot army. If you want to play, and let'srobot.tv, and if you want to build a robot, is it the same place? Can I get kits there? Or where
There's documentation there, so there's resources. We have, a super helpful Discord.
Nice
there's some documentation there. Right. We're still working on a lot of stuff. So this company... super small. I'm the only full-time person. We have a lot of awesome part-time volunteers that help out. But we're still super early stage.
I am glad that we could get in at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
I have a feeling this is going places.
Yeah.
This is
awesome.
Really, really neat. Don't you think?
Thank you.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I love it. I mean, the interactive bit. Just knowing that you're doing something online and that translates into the real world, that's a certain sense. As a user, there's a certain sense of power there. And, obviously, this is for fun, so
yeah, and that's the whole point, right? So this
is
a
little combat going on over here. Stop it!
Does
that happen? Do people start banging each
other? Oh yeah, they always want to fight. We actually had some battle.
Stop!
Guy
fighting.
Come by with battle bots yesterday and had some fun.
Can you put a weapon on
They're
your
playing.
Robot?
Could
I put an
They're
egg
playing.
Beater or a saw?
Yeah,
on
some people have definitely done that.
put a spatula on the end and you can lift it off the ground. And
we had
tip
a
it over.
We had a Doomba on the other day. It was a Roomba with a knife attachment.
A Doomba?
Bad idea.
And he had a room full of balloons for us to pop. And,
how hard would it be to interface my Roomba to this?
The hack has already been sort of done. The user who's done it is documenting it right now. So.
I could charge people to vacuum my house.
Oh, you totally could. Yeah. We even had a lawnmower. So we've had
my lawn.
Maximum overdrive.
Only $5. No.
There was a lawnmower a few weeks ago. There was a post on Reddit that there was 10,000 people trying to mow this guy's lawn in Nebraska.
That is amazing.
The same guy also made a controllable laser toy for his cat. And there's a lot of cat toys. Yeah.
Cat toys. I didn't think of that.
If you hook that up, some sort of control mechanism with an XY pad,
mm-hmm.
that would be amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you can watch the cat.
Heck yes.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a robot biting me on my ankle right now. Look at that. Look, stop it. There you go.
But yeah, if you guys go to the site, like, there's a bunch of other people who broadcast. We call them robocasters. You should say hi.
Really cool.
Yeah,
this is really cool. We're going to keep this going for a while. Thank you, Jill.
Yeah.
If you want to know more, Let's Robot. .tv, and if you want to follow Jill's channel, letsrobot.tv/robocasters/Jill. She's at Let's Jill on the Twitter.
Yeah, Let's Jill on Twitter.
Let's Jill on Twitter.
Netflix and Jill.
Netflix and Jill.
There you go.
She's even got a t-shirt.
Yes.
Of her very own. Up next, Jason's going to review what some are calling the first 5G phone.
Mm-hmm.
Asterisk.
Italics. The first 5G.
And all that. We'll take a look at the Z3 in just a bit. But first, a word from our sponsor. You know, if you've downloaded our shows ever over the last 10 years, you have been downloading it from our content distribution network from CashFly. CashFly, I have to tell you, is awesome. And if you're looking for a CDN, I want you to look at CashFly. Remember the last time you were woken up at 3 a.m. with your calls? The CDN's down. Never. Our CDN never goes down. I love it. Don't worry. With unreliable tech support, every second of your site's down is money being lost on your watch. Being the one to answer the tough questions about your CDN coverage, that's no picnic, especially when you can't even predict CDN costs because of unpredictable usage-based bills. I should tell Jill about CashFly. CashFly has been doing this since 2002. They eliminate CDN outages, help customers reach new markets, and control costs for all their customers. You know what they say? The roads must roll. The podcasts must download. We love CashFly. They guarantee 100% availability with their bulletproof 100% SLA. A great team of smart, easy-to-talk-to folks and agile techs. Not only can they answer your questions, they can fix things, and they can do it fast without having to pass you around. If you're in software, if you're a podcaster, if you ever have content you want to get to customers, you got to get a great CDN. And you know what I love? You don't have to predict how much it's going to cost. You know. Say goodbye to logging in several times a week just to see, or daily, trying to figure out, oh, my God, can I pay this bill? On average, customers who switch to CashFly save more than 20% and a lot of time, too. We've been hosting all our podcasts, our audio and video on CashFly for, it's about 10 years now. And man, every month our viewers and listeners download literally, I can't remember the number last time I checked, it was more than a petabyte. A petabyte from CashFly. We love you, CashFly. We wouldn't exist without CashFly. Join the thousands of others who trust CashFly's reliable network. Let CashFly give you some sanity back. Now, we've actually arranged a good deal with CashFly, a special offer. They're giving away a complimentary detailed analysis of your current CDN bills and trends. And so you can see, and they can give you a very clear guess, accurate guess of what you might be leaving on the table. As much as 20% or more. How much you'd save if you went to CashFly. Just go to twit.cashfly.com. Twit.cashfly.com. It's a no-brainer. If you've got data, if your customers are downloading it, you need to go to CashFly. All right, Jill, let the robots roll. Let the robots roll. We're going to go over and take a look at the Z3. It's great to meet you. Thank you
very
so
nice
much. I'm building one
that
of these.
Awesome.
I'm going to make a robot. I don't know what it's going to do, but... I don't know, a spanking robot, something for Stacy. And then if I charge money, I can make a lot of money. People punching me.
Yeah, oh, heck yeah.
Dropping,
it's almost, it reminds me of like the fair, you know, going to the fair.
The dunk tank.
The dunk tank. I mean, people pay for that stuff.
We could put a bucket of water up there.
Oh, that,
no problem.
Nothing could possibly go wrong in a studio filled with technology if we put a bucket full of water over
there. You know what we got to figure out?
Is
a way, like, we could remember Captain Kangaroo? You probably
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Remember Bunny Rabbit and the ping pong balls would drop down? I could get a giant net full of ping pong balls, and we'd have to have some way of competing. And once during every show, you would get to trigger the ping pong balls.
Oh, people would totally pay for that. Absolutely.
Right. We're talking
phones
again.
You could add
the
wheels to the Moto Z3.
Yes.
If you wanted. And we could roboticize the Moto Z3 for Verizon.
This is actually a good looking phone. Now, it is. Is it a flagship?
I would say that yes. This is in the in the Motorola realm, this is about as close as we're getting to a flagship right now. But this is exclusive to Verizon. You may remember a month ago I reviewed the Moto Z3 Play.
Right.
This is the Moto Z3. It actually has improved specs over the Play, yet it costs $20 less.
Oh,
so it's kind of a little confusing as far as like Motorola signaling what this actually is in their lineup.
But you have to get it from Verizon.
Yeah. You got to be with Verizon. You got to get it for Verizon. It's the only network that it works on. So $480 for the Moto Z3 for Verizon. And yeah, I mean, there's many similarities between the Z3 Play that I reviewed already and this one. Namely, the design is almost identical. I mean, you've got your side of the phone fingerprint reader.
In a way, I like that because remember what Verizon used to do with Motorola's, the Droid?
Yeah.
I hated Droids.
Droid.
And they were ugly. And these, so at least this looks, it's a gorgeous design.
Yeah, and it, you know what? It feels really nice. It's pretty slender. You know, obviously you can see the pogo pins back here. This is made for Moto Mods. It has the protruding camera, which when you have a Moto Mod, it kind of makes more sense why that's protruding so far. It kind of snaps into place. Doesn't feel like such a protrusion there.
Right.
But yeah, it feels really thin, really light. It's glass front and back, so it, you know, it feels, let's say, more premium than the $480 price tag. Hello, robot.
You LCD can go ahead and munch on my OLED, OLED screen.
The Super AMOLED Full HD Plus.
It looks like an AMOLED. It really looks nice.
Yeah, and you've got, you know, you've got the Motorola touches like this, the Moto display, which is kind of the ambient light mode. If it comes back, well, it was there for a second and then it went away. But you know, where the screen lights up even though the display is off to give you things like phone notification.
Does it do that thing with the pic camera and the flashlight?
Let's see here. Chop.
Chop.
Gives you flashlight.
Oh, yeah, good. I set off the flashlight all the time on my phone.
What is it? It's
yeah, that was the camera, I think. Something like
or a recalibrate map. I can't remember. But, yes, so you've got all those motions and everything. I mean, Motorola is all about software.
Like this?
Oh, there you go.
It
yes,
did. It worked.
That's what it is. Okay.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yes. So you do that.
Boy,
and launch the
camera. Know what? That's muscle memory because I haven't had a
no
Moto
kidding.
In a long time.
Well, and I did that a month ago, and I haven't done it with this device, so I forgot that fast. Yeah. It's no surprise. I never remember
anything.
I
loved the Moto X. I really did. I thought that was a great phone.
Well, and, you know, Motorola had kind of hung its hat for quite a while on the fact that, on one hand, the OS, the version of Android,
in many ways is
pretty clean.
Yeah.
But then there's also kind of those sense kind of software enhancements like what I've just shown off.
Yeah.
You can also see here there's a gesture navigation on here like the Z3 Play that you can turn on that actually I think is maybe just a tad bit better in some ways than the Pi gesture.
So this is Oreo?
This is Oreo right now.
But this is very much like the Pi pill.
But yes, so Motorola has its own gesture in the sense that you do that to go back instead of having the back button that appears there.
Okay.
And I just feel like that's just a little bit more.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Makes more sense. I hope that Android Pi eventually goes that direction. So yeah, it's, as far as underneath Snapdragon 835, that's actually an upgrade from the Moto Z3 Play, which is a 6 something, if I remember
correctly.
But that's
the same as in the Pixel 2. That's a modern
that's
processor.
That's all right. It's last year's flagship processor, let's say. The problem with that, which I'll talk about a little bit in a little bit more, is the fact that the flagship feature of this phone doesn't come out until next year. So by the time you get to next year,
you'll be a 2 year.
It's a 2 year old processor inside.
Right.
But 4 gigs of RAM, 64 gigs of storage, the dual cameras on the back, 12 megapixel and they're dual 12 megapixel. Sorry, on the back, and then 8 megapixel wide angle front facing camera.
Right.
3,000 milliamp hour battery.
Let's talk mods.
All right.
What are those?
So Moto Mods. All right. So
and is that really a thing? Is that going to or are
well,
they just going to go
Motorola certainly thought so. Almost 3 years ago we started to see Motorola's mod approach. You know, mods were a big deal and Motorola came out with its own. The thing that Motorola I think did right is they standardized around this. But they gave it a 3 year window. They said all of our phone designs that support Moto Mods will support all of the same mods. It'll be standardized
and
in the design.
And they clip on magnetically and make the connection through those pins there.
They snap into place.
They had a speaker mod, they had a camera mod, they had a battery mod.
Alexa, you know, just a bunch of different types of mods.
Which no one bought probably.
I mean, it's hard to say how successful it really was. I have to guess that, You know, I mean, the Z3 Play, it actually shipped with a mod in the box. This does not.
But
so that could account for why the price is a little bit less.
This ships with a promise in the box.
And that's all. I'm not even sure that you get this Moto mod in 2019 included. I think you still have to spring for it. So you're probably going to have
free.
To pay for it then.
Oh.
But the big promise, the big feature of the Z3 is that it's going to be the first Verizon phone to support the 5G network.
So it'll have
a Moto mod.
5G mod on that'll give you access to the 5G network.
Yes, it's supposedly going to come out early 2019.
Okay.
That remains to be seen. So basically, if you're springing the money for this now, you're doing it on the promise that you will be the first to be on the 5G network, and you know that carries a lot of promises. 10 times the speed of what we're used to. They pointed out 90 Spotify songs downloaded in 10 seconds. So way faster. But the mod is going to be bulky. It's a pretty bulky attachment. It actually has these like protruding antennas all around the Moto mod, so it looks really kind of funky. And that's because it's using something called millimeter wave 5G technology, which is, you know, it's a higher spectrum. It's between 24 gigahertz and 100 gigahertz. But that comes at the cost of shorter range, worse interference. So, you know, even foliage can interfere. I mean, it has all of these trade-offs. So, yes, you would have a phone that gets you access to, or, you know, early access to the 5G network, but it comes with some serious downsides, which may or may not make it an amazing experience. I'm sure Verizon will have some of it kind of tweaked in software for gracefully handing off to other, you know, connectivity if things get bad.
I feel like the mods, when you buy a mod-based Moto phone, you're buying into something that may not be around for very long. They guaranteed 3 years. We're at the end of that.
Yeah.
And now you're buying into something not only that may not be around very long, but may never come out, which is 5G from Verizon.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know where that's going to be. It may not even be in your market. It may never come out.
That's true.
We don't know how much that mod's going to cost. It does have its own battery, so at least it doesn't kill your phone.
Right.
I feel like that's a lot to ask.
I feel like the promise, I mean, how many people is the promise really going to be that appealing to?
Would you buy that just because maybe you'd get a 5G mod down the road?
I feel like when 5G comes out,
I'm going to get a new phone by
then. Yeah, you'd want a new phone then. If it's going to be 6, 8, 10 months down the line, because truthfully, we don't actually know when it's going to happen, and this phone has kind of some of last year's specs,
yeah.
I don't know. I'd be asking myself whether it's that worth it to me, whether I'm willing to take that chance, and honestly, whether this device in and of itself is good enough without 5G for me to live the next however
long.
Is it
worth
$480?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think if you're buying this, you are buying it because of 5G, because any of the other standout characteristics, I mean, it's a nice phone. But there's nothing that really jumps out that says, this is the most amazing phone on Verizon's network and you have to get it. For $480, it's fine. There are other options, too.
This is the Tesla marketing strategy. You know, if you buy a Model 3 right now, if you're willing to pay an extra $3,000, then you can maybe someday upgrade it to self-driving if that ever comes out.
Yeah, right.
If you don't buy it now, you have to pay $5,000. It still may never come out. I feel like it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, it kind of feels that.
It's hard to imagine a lot of products where they say, well, maybe this will do something more next year or the year after. We can't promise you, but if it does, it will.
It really feels to me like what Motorola wanted more than anything was to be able to say,
first,
we are the first.
First.
And that's what they did. And you know, the opposite side of that is, we are the first, except you have to wait a really long time, and who knows if it's actually going to happen. But we are the first.
First.
We were here. And I don't mean to sound negative about the phone itself. It's a nice phone. But you just kind of have to ask yourself, the potential kind of future, you know, looking into the future,
right,
whether it's going to get 5G or not. It probably will, but will it be super usable? Are the kind of outdated specs, is that worth it to you? There's probably other options out there. So it's one of many, let's say.
Yeah. I wonder if
okay.
The real purpose is so that it can sit there in the Verizon store.
Yeah.
And people
and have 5G emblazoned all over the
5G,
signage.
And people could say, well, it's a nice phone. I'm going to get a phone anyway. Hey, it'd be nice to have 5G. But I think anybody who's a little more sophisticated about what the real future holds for 5G, or Moto mods, for that matter, might want to hold off.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
So
the Z3.
Moto Z3.
Would you get a Play instead, or maybe a G6, that G6 Plus? Those are nice, a lot more, half the cost.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess, it really just depends on what you want, right? That's kind of a downgrade in specs. This is a better spec than even the Play inside. Okay. And, you know, but you're not going to get the battery mods. Right. You'd have to pick that up separately. I don't know. It's kind of a confusing device, to be honest.
Yeah. It's interesting. Thank you for the review, though. We appreciate it. You're going to be switching away from that phone and into the Note 9, and we'll get your review on that maybe next week.
Goodbye, Z3. Hello, Note 9. I'll go ahead and put you in my pocket now.
That's a powerhouse for twice the cost.
I know. It's kind of difficult to compare these side by side because they really
Do you just take the SIM out of one and put it in the other? Is that how you review
I do. But, you know, sometimes that can be a challenge because some phones don't work so well with Project FiSIM.
Oh, so, that's your SIM. Yeah. So that one you had to use a Verizon SIM on.
There's a Verizon SIM in there.
I'm a Fi guy, too, but I stick with the Pixel, too.
Yeah.
And I can't wait. Maybe when I get back, we'll have a Pixel 3 in a house. Maybe.
The way the leaks are happening, I wouldn't be surprised if tomorrow Google just says, whatever, here's
the Pixel 3. That's the funny thing about this Pixel 3.
Yeah.
Is that everybody's been saying October, like nobody knows, but for some reason everybody's saying October.
October 4th, because the last 2 years has been on October 4th.
But in the last 2 years, have we known this much about the phone that's going to come out?
We usually know in advance. I don't know if we know this far, but what's different right now is that there's apparently a Ukrainian company that got a hold of a bunch of units that they're selling on the black market.
For thousands of dollars.
For like $2,000 for a device. And, I mean, they have a ton of them. And so all of these reviews are appearing. Full-on reviews with camera samples.
That's why they say the Russian. Russian all over.
Yep. So that's why you're seeing this influx of reviews on a phone that Google has not even announced yet. So it's a big deal. Like, Google's got to be really, really upset right now.
It would be smart. If it's done, if it's cooked, it'd be smart to put it out. Yeah. In fact, do it before Apple puts out their phone. Get some attention.
Sure.
They've done that in the past.
Yeah.
We're going to wrap things up with the mailbag in just a little bit. But first, Megan Maroney had some fun. Last week, she talked with a former Apple engineer, Ken Kashenda, who's written a new book that Rene Ritchie and others have said it's the best Apple book ever written. Creative Selection, Inside Apple's Design Process During the Golden Age of Steve Jobs. Ken was the head engineer on the iPhone keyboard. Watch him discuss it with Megan.
You were the head of the team that the keyboard team, the people that came.
I was head of the keyboard team. There was a keyboard team of one. I was the head of it. Yeah.
But tell the story about how you got to be the head of this team of one.
Right. Well, see, that part of the idea. What you need to know is that there were so few people working on software for what I would term the high-level software, the user interface software. And I would term that as, you know, anything, you know, so from a technical standpoint, anything from core animation on up. And so everything from the low-level graphics, you know, everything that users can see and touch, apps, and then eventually the frameworks that developers were using. That's the team that I was on. And when I started, there were only six or eight of us. Mm. And, people were joining a little bit. And so that was everything. That was apps. You know, we were working on Notes. We were working on Safari and Springboard and Mail and Calendar. And so, there were more apps than there were people at the time. And so then there was also UIKit. So even though that was not made for developers at that point, we were making UIKit for ourselves, frameworks. And so then there were system level features like the keyboard. And so there were two fellows working on that, but they had lots of other responsibilities on their plate as well. And so the way we worked is that, you know, everything was demos. We did very, very few paper mock-ups. We didn't draw on whiteboards. We made live demos of everything. And so what would happen is, at that point, gosh, like twice a week, Scott Forstall would lead a team. Henri, who was heading up the software engineers, and Greg Christie, who was heading up the human interface team, the HI team, as we called it, the small team of designers. And, you know, so probably about a dozen or 15 of us would go around in a little posse, go visit engineers, either in their offices or the designers, you know, in their studio, and look at demos. And so one day there was a very difficult keyboard demo where Scott was trying to type, and so we had these devices, and so I'll pick up an original iPhone here, because that's about the form factor of the device. And so the devices had a tether coming out of it, like a 30-pin connector. Mm-hmm. But it was actually not a 30-pin connector. It just kind of looked like one. Maybe the cable was a little bit thicker. And it was tethered to a board, a bare computer board that was sitting on your desk, and then that was connected by USB to a Mac. And this device that you'd hold in your hand was just a display screen, but it was touch sensitive. Mm. And with the Mac and the board and the display screen, we could get our software running, and you could hold it in your hand and use it. And so Scott had this keyboard demo in his hands, and it just wasn't working very well. And so he was trying to type and failing at it. And eventually he got to the point where he like held the screen up to his face and was trying to type an S to try to type his name, Scott. And he's like, he couldn't. He just couldn't. So he put the Wallaby down, and we went over to the next demo, to the next office. And we didn't think anything of it. Sometimes demos went well and sometimes they went poorly, and you know, everybody gave their feedback and whatever, and we just moved on. But a couple of days after that, Henri called everybody out, all the software engineers out into the hallway out of our offices, and he said, okay, everybody, stop what you're doing. Stop working on Safari, stop working on Notes and Calendar and Spring Board every day. Stop. Everybody from right now is a keyboard engineer. Mm-hmm. Progress is too slow. We need to step up the attention on keyboards. So everybody just needs to start making prototypes of keyboards. And so we did. I went away and started making prototypes, and so did everybody else. And we went around and were showing them to each other informally as we did. That's just the way that we worked. So I would come up with an idea, show it to a teammate, and it was like, no, that's terrible, you know, throw it out. And but eventually the goal was, you know, through this, you know, this is good, this is terrible, you know, improving these demos. We were all pointing toward a big demo. We would take the ones that were more successful, and Scott would try them out. It'd be like a keyboard derby, as I call it in the book, where Scott would try them all out. And so he did. And I tell the story, I almost don't want to spoil it for readers, but eventually he picked mine as the winner. And so from that point, I became what's called in Apple speak the DRI, the directly responsible individual. I became the DRI for keyboards from that point. And so, yeah, I became the keyboard team. And everybody else went back to what they were doing. I mean, again, by that point, I mean, there's as many people as there were apps almost. Keyboards became my job, and everybody else resumed their regularly scheduled programming.
I would have loved a word with Ken when that phone came out, because I couldn't type my name to save my life.
Why?
I don't know. It was something about the way the A and the P were. It would always type my name wrong for the longest time, and autocorrect wouldn't save me.
Well, I always got tripped up. Like, I'm so used to Android, and you know, Apple has addressed this now.
There was no Android at the time.
Well, that's true. Yeah. But anytime I ever had an iPhone in my hand, like on Android, I'm so used to the swappable keyboards and having customizability.
Yeah.
That keyboard, like, it was really hard to tell what caps was.
Exactly.
Or
all uppercase.
It was displayed in uppercase, it's but you
crazy.
Were typing in lowercase unless the caps lock button had a little light on it.
That's still a problem.
I'm like, no. It's so confusing to me.
So anyway, you want to see the rest of that interview with Ken Kishena? That's coming up September 7th. His book comes out, I think, September 4th, right about that time. And everybody's raving about it, about what it was like to work inside of Apple. Yeah. Ken Kishena, that is a great interview. The book is called Creative Selection.
Awesome.
And I'm bringing it on my trip because I can't wait to read it. It's funny, we had Bill Atkinson on Triangulation on Friday. He's actually going to do 2 weeks in a row. And he showed the old, the Magic Link, which is the thing they designed in the early 90s that was really a prototype for what the iPhone became 10 years later. And its keyboard had uppercase and lowercase. When you hit caps,
it
would go uppercase. Yes. It's like they had it in 1992.
Yeah.
But you know what? Now that I look at an actual keyboard, it's all uppercase.
Yeah, but that's not digital. That's physical. It can't change.
Yeah.
But that was, I thought it was a slavish, kind of slavish devotion to making it look like that physical keyboard where it's digital. You could change it.
Right.
It could change. Anyway.
Things have changed.
Things have, we've come a long way, baby.
The robots are still fighting, it appears, or they're staring each other down.
Something really interesting happens because they can hear us, we can hear them, and you quickly forget that there's people on the other end of the internet, and really these robots become personified. It's very interesting.
You know, I don't know if it's because I know this or not, but I'm able to accept these robots more than I am a robot that is completely computer-driven.
I agree.
I'm not sure exactly why. It's not like I would want a robot that has an actual human on the other end with a camera roaming around my house all the time, necessarily. Everybody can choose for themselves. But there's something like, but the idea of having an AI-driven robot in my house to be my companion doesn't sound very appealing to me either.
And these are
at
so much
this,
more human.
You know, there's some actual emotion and people behind it.
They become human.
Yeah, totally. It's a fusion human robot.
All right, Captain Pirtle. Time for the mailbag. Sam is visiting us. She is retired from the Merchant Marine, and she's a regular, a good friend, and it's great to have you in the studio, Sam. She's been here all week. She came and visited All About Android, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And she has delivered our mail.
Or Tech News Weekly, actually.
Via her 600-foot container vessel. Full speed ahead. Email number one. Hello, I love the show, says Darcy, and I try to watch every week. I have a question. Thank you, Darcy. I'm interested in making pictures into postcards. I would like to know the best way to do this. That's walking right into it, isn't it? Bill Atkinson was on yesterday. He has the best iOS app. It's iOS only. It's called PhotoCard. And it is easily the best app out there for making postcards. What's great about PhotoCard is they're about the size. In fact, I could show you a PhotoCard if I take this 8.5 by 11 sheet, fold it in half. That's the size. So they're nice and big, right? They're laminated. Bill does the color correction by hand himself, and he's a very talented photographer, so they look great. You could flip them over. You could put messages. It's got stamps. In fact, it has postage on it, so you can mail it anywhere in the world. You do have to pay for that, obviously. It's about $1.50 to send a postcard, but I use them all the time
awesome.
I travel. If I take a great picture, I'll do this for you. In Barcelona, take a great picture of some nice jamón ibérico, a little manchego, some Rioja. I'll send it to you and make you crazy. And I could just do that on my phone, and then you get a physical postcard in the mail.
It's so much better than picking up a tourist trap postcard somewhere. Although those have their time and place.
There are other apps, lots of other apps that do this. There are Android apps that do this as well as iOS. But this is the best one out there. Here's our Christmas card. We send this out every year. We use Bill's photo card to do the Christmas card every year. You know that. We take the picture. We used to have the staff sign it. Now I just made rubber stamps with all your names.
Good, because signing it was always a challenge.
You had to sign like 150 cards. Now I just go bump, and I make it all at once. Isn't that nice?
That's perfect. Christmas. I was really surprised because when I read this, I was like, oh, Google's got to have this in Google Photos. Why? It seems like the perfect thing. They should
Apple announced a program called Cards. They killed.
Huh.
It was out a couple of years. There are other ones. I'm sure some of the card companies make them.
Yeah.
But this is the one I like, PhotoCard. And you can see why. And look, that's a real stamp with real postage on it.
I made it.
You can make it whatever image you want. They have lots of stamps for, you know, this is all the Christmassy stuff, but they have other stamps for other stuff. I really like this.
That's great.
Bill does such a nice job, and he's such a sweet guy. If you haven't seen our Triangulation episodes with Bill Atkinson, they're all at twit.tv/TRI, including the new one recorded yesterday and another one coming next week.
Right on.
Really a sweetheart.
Very cool.
All right, what do you have?
All right, Alexandru says, hey, guys, I have a Pixel 2 with Android Pie, and I'm trying to find a way to prevent Wi-Fi from turning on its own every time I turn it off. Thanks. Love the show. All right, so here's what Alexandru is talking about.
He's turning it off wrong.
Yeah, totally. You're not supposed to go into settings and turn off the thing that says turn, you know,
really?
That lights up when you turn on. No, so it's called auto Wi-Fi. It's automatic Wi-Fi, and it does this for a reason. This was actually a feature in Oreo, and now in Pi, they've turned it on by default. So what it does is it recognizes when you are near a location that you have successfully connected
to a friendly Wi-Fi access point.
Yes, and it has a strong Wi-Fi connection. So basically what's happening is even when your Wi-Fi is turned off, if you have a certain feature on, it's still actively scanning in the background to know when you're near these Wi-Fi access points. And if it recognizes one from the list, it turns your Wi-Fi on. Why does it do this? To save you data so
but
that you're not doing mobile
it.
Data. You can. You actually, and on Pi, you actually have to opt out of it.
I didn't realize
it's on
that.
By default.
Because I always turn it on. I like having that
feature.
Yeah,
it's nice. It's nice. Every once in a while, though, it gets tripped up and it'll connect you to an access point that doesn't have good internet.
You know what I don't like is the Xfinity Wi-Fi. They're all over Petaluma.
Yeah.
Because everybody who gets an Xfinity Wi-Fi by default has that turned on.
Yep.
And a lot of them don't work well.
Yep.
And so my phone will join it. So I forget Xfinity Wi-Fi. I don't know you. I don't want you. I don't like you. And if you forget it, it won't join those.
Right, right.
So but that's a problem. If you ever join it again, it may be.
Yep, it'll add it to the list. Yeah. So here's how you turn it off. If you, on Pi, if you go into your settings, network and internet, Wi-Fi, and then Wi-Fi preferences, or you can just do a search, which is my new favorite way of finding settings, is just go into the search in settings and type in Wi-Fi preferences. It'll take you right there. You toggle off, turn on Wi-Fi automatically. So there's a feature in there, a little box that says turn on Wi-Fi automatically. Make sure that's off. If you actually want to turn this on, you turn that back on, but then you also have to make sure another setting is enabled. It's called Wi-Fi scanning. And that's basically what the phone is doing in scanning for Wi-Fi, even when Wi-Fi is turned off. You have to go settings, security and location. Hi, little robot. Location, advanced, scanning, or search for Wi-Fi scanning.
It's just
and setting
like a
search,
dog. It's humping
and then
leg.
Enable Wi-Fi scanning. I'm pretending like it's normal. I'm pretending like there's nothing strange about what's happening right now. But anyways, I like that feature.
So I'm curious because I was actually very surprised by the reaction to Android Pi. I've been using the public beta for a few months, and I love it.
Yeah.
And there's so much negative. I've never seen so much negative reaction for an Android version. What do you think?
I like it.
Me too.
I mean, I don't know the negative reaction. To a certain degree, I feel like sometimes people just want to be negative and complain about things.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, I'm sure everybody has a valid criticism. I'd have to read up on it and find out exactly why. I like it. I think really what it boils down to some degree, is that the phone market has matured. The OSs have matured so much that it's really hard to release a new major upgrade to an OS and be surprised or amazed or, you know, energized by the new features that appear there in the way that we were used to 4, 5, 6 years ago when everything was such a major upgrade
because
it sucks so
true.
Bad.
Yeah. I think there is, in fact, also a thing, and we saw it with the Snapchat changes, too. People don't like change.
Yeah.
And at this point, people are so familiar with the Android interface that the few changes, there weren't a lot, but the few changes they made really bug people.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, I don't want that. I don't want the lozenge. I don't want... And I feel like I like a lot of the new features. You and I are used to change. It's part of
the life. Yeah, I know. We kind of have to be used to it. It's part of the job. I mean, but there are some features that I can understand why people are resistant to them. Gesture navigation. You know, there's a lot of hatred around gesture navigation. I will totally admit that the first the developer previews that I used, it's been improved over versions, but I wasn't sold on gesture navigation in Pi initially, and I don't know if it's that I've just been beaten into submission and I'm okay with it now, or whether I've just realized over time that once you get used to it, it's not that big a deal. But yeah. it takes a little bit of suspension of that knee-jerk reaction of saying, oh, it's different than what I'm used to. I'm going to not like it. You kind of have to, like, I mean, what else are you going to do? You can install something else on your phone, I suppose. That's the beauty of Android. But if you're going to stick with Google's version of Android, I mean, just get used to
that,
it.
That is part of the problem. Maybe that's why people are so upset. You don't have much choice. It's their way or the highway, really. Yeah. I guess you could stay with 8 if you wanted to.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm very happy with Pi. Somebody was complaining about the swipe up to get to the application menu. That works for me.
I complained about that a lot, too, but I've adapted. It took me a long time to adapt to that, I will say. That particular feature took me a while, but now I'm used to it.
Jason Howell, you find him in All About Android. He's every Tuesday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern time. It's around about midnight UTC.
That's right.
Twit.tv/live to watch that show. You can also watch him every Thursday with Megan Maroney, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. That's his Tech News Weekly show. And, of course, whenever possible, we'd like to get him on the new screensavers. In fact, he's going to be back next week.
Next week.
Hosting with Patrick Norton. I'm going to be gone for a few episodes. I think I'm missing 3.
I think you're missing 4.
I think I'm missing 4?
Yeah, because Patrick Norton next week, the following week.
It is 4. Two with you and 2 with Megan.
Yeah, so it's 2 with me and 2 with Megan. Rich DeMuro is going to be on in a couple of weeks.
Maybe
2 weeks
I'll come back.
So Megan and I are going to each get a rich episode.
I am taking the longest vacation I've ever taken.
Well, that's exciting.
We shall see. I will be back, actually, though, on the 23rd to host Twit. So I'll actually be back, but I gave myself a few extra hours to kind of sleep in.
It's hard to return from that long of a vacation and jump right back into the fire, you know?
Yeah. A lot of stuff will happen while I'm gone. The iPhone will be announced.
Yeah.
Maybe even the Pixel 3.
That's the other challenge of a person, like people who talk about this stuff all the time. When you take a break from it, jumping back in and having that cumulative knowledge of news leading up to that point,
what I do actually is I check the news every day.
Yeah,
I have
you probably
to.
Did.
I bookmark stories. I have to pay attention because you're exactly right. If you miss 3 weeks, you could miss a ton of stuff.
Yep.
And then I'll come back on and Jason will say, well, can you believe what happened with Facebook last week? And I'll go, what?
Who's Facebook?
What? Facebook. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We do the new screensavers Saturday afternoons, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. That's 2200 UTC. You can come by and say hi. Join Huli and the gang. Hello, Huli. If you want to watch live, go to twit.tv/live. We have several video streams, audio streams, too. Huli's one of those little robots that's wandering around right now. You can also join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. That's what we need. We need chat room interfaces to robots in the studio. That's exactly what we need. If you can't watch live, you can watch on demand after the fact. All you have to do is go to twit.tv, find your favorite show, download episodes. Better yet, subscribe. Subscribe. That way, whatever podcatcher you use, you'll get it. By the end of the day on Saturday, you'll have the new screensavers. End of the day on Sunday, you'll have Twit, All About Android. End of the day on Tuesday. See, that way, if you just subscribe, it happens automatically, and you're never out of great things to listen to on your device. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time on the new screensavers. Thanks, Jason. Bye-bye.
Bye, all.
Bye. Robot.